This is the Registry Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Perspectives Podcast, where we dive deep into the dynamics of real estate, uncovering the trends, technologies, and talents shaping the future of this ever-evolving industry. I'm your host, Vladimir Vosanets, co-founder and publisher of The Registry. In today's episode, we have the pleasure of hosting a truly remarkable guest, Sarah Liu, a key figure at Fifth Wall, the largest venture capital firm focused on the global real estate technology landscape. Sarah's work is at the intersection of innovation and real estate, guiding the industry into new territories with strategic investments and partnerships that are not just transforming buildings and spaces, but also redefining how we interact with our physical world. Sarah's journey in the world of tech and real estate is both inspiring and instructive. With a keen eye for groundbreaking solutions and a deep understanding of the market's needs, she has been instrumental in nurturing startups that aim to revolutionize everything from construction and design to property management and smart home technologies. So whether you're a real estate professional, a tech enthusiast, or just curious about the spaces we inhabit, stay tuned. This conversation with Sarah Liu is bound to enlighten, inform, and inspire. Let's get started. Sarah, good afternoon. How's it going?
Doing well. Great to see you, Vlad.
Excellent. Where do we find you today? Where are you?
I'm actually in Northern California today, which is not where I'm normally based. I usually split time between Austin and New York City.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. So what brings you to Northern California, since that doesn't seem to be a place where you are often?
I'm a big skier, so I'm up here for the week skiing.
Okay, excellent. Wonderful, wonderful. Sarah, by way of introduction, would you mind telling us a little bit about you, sort of your background, kind of how you got to Fifth Wall and sort of your path through the industry as it were?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've been at Fifth Wall since 2018. So it's been a while. I joined towards the tail end of our very first fund. Our firm was founded in late 2016. And the thesis behind it was, of course, you know, being able to bridge the gap in technology adoption between a lot of the largest owners, operators, developers in real estate and the technology startups that are trying to address their needs. And prior to Fifth Wall, I was at McKinsey. So I had some experience bridging the gap in terms of technology usage already from my time there at the San Francisco office of McKinsey, working on some digital transformation type projects as well as general strategy projects. And before that, I actually briefly spent some time at a private equity real estate shop on the kind of traditional asset management side of things in real estate. And so I saw firsthand there as well just how little technology was in place already. Saw the need, was excited to join a fast-growing company and startup, and have worn a lot of different hats since then at Fifth Wall. In the early days, we were a much smaller team, so I really did everything from thesis generation to a lot of the operational stuff internally as well. I got us our very first Zoom license at Fifth Wall.
Okay, that's something. With all that, tell us a bit about Fifth Wall. Also as a company, how it was formed, where the principles are essentially, and kind of, where do you guys play both in terms of the industry, but, geographically as well?
Yeah. So we were founded in LA and we all used to be based in LA, very traditional 5 days a week in the office, of course, back in the olden days. And the premise from day one has really been built world innovation. But where we've taken that over time has evolved a little bit. So we started with only, I think, 6 or 7 corporate strategic LPs in our very first fund, essentially one in every major asset class, Lennar in home building, Hines in office, so on and so forth. Then in fund two, we grew to 40 LPs and we expanded internationally so that we actually had European and Asian LPs. And now we have over 110 corporate LPs all over the world again. So across every single asset class, now looking at things like construction, supply chain, some of the more, institutional asset managers on the LP side versus just the active kind of operator side as well. And we now have offices in the US, in LA, San Francisco, New York City, which is our current headquarters. And then, I'm personally based in Austin. And then we have an office in London as well as a presence in Singapore. So We've expanded quite a bit geographically. We've also launched a climate tech fund. We've launched a dedicated European prop tech fund. So the strategy's also expanded quite a bit. But throughout all of that, we've definitely always stayed very true to that built world orientation.
Yeah, interesting. And you're absolutely right. I think that this world has not experienced to this point, or at least maybe at least a couple of years ago, I would argue, was still pretty slow to, you know, adapt some of the new technologies. Tell us, you know, how difficult that was in the early days, or maybe still is, to, you know, convince the industry to consider things. And maybe as kind of a background, we should also mention, you know, the types of companies that you guys are typically approaching, and the, you know, companies that your companies you're helping, you know, come out, you know, whom are they approaching? You know, who are their customers, and how do they earn revenue?
Yeah, so the companies that we're working with primarily skew towards being more B2B versus B2C. So they're targeting kind of enterprise customers, just because that tends to be where we can add the most value, where RLPs might be direct customers of theirs. But that being said, we will invest in some more consumer-focused businesses where RLPs might be indirect channel partners instead, right? But across the board, it's very important for us to be able to add value to these businesses. And we've invested across every business model as well, software, marketplaces, hardware plus software, some tech-enabled services businesses as well. And on the climate tech side, you know, it goes even broader. A lot of deep tech, material sciences, energy, things like that. So it's quite broad. And we're fortunate that, you know, over time, as our AUM has grown, we're now at a point where we really invest at every stage between seed to pre-IPO.
Yeah. One of the things that we've noticed in this sort of prop tech world is that, you know, unlike most of the sort of technology that typically comes out of the West Coast and, you know, likely out of, you know, the Bay Area, Seattle, you know, that kind of thing, on the prop tech side, it seems to kind of aggregate in, you know, New York, right? And then some of the bigger cities. Have you found that to still be the case? Do you still find kind of that to be the sort of gravitational force for the industry and the innovation in it?
Yeah, I think that prop tech definitely spreads itself across the country a little bit differently versus kind of some of your more traditional, you know, tech companies that are focused on tools for developers, for example, as in software developers, not real estate developers. So we do see a lot of activity in New York and in LA, just because those are two big real estate hubs. Chicago as well is another great example. And even, you know, Texas and Miami sometimes now punching above their weight because of the amount of development that's going on there. So I do think, you know, the actual physical asset development tends to inspire people to build technology, because a lot of the founders that we're working with are folks who came from the built world industry in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, they've experienced the pain point, and that's what inspired them to build.
Yeah. We have noticed, you know, this may have been, you know, more kind of a characteristic of the industry earlier, but, you know, there were, you know, companies popping up like in Europe and in Asia that were very interesting and were really kind of pushing the envelope on some, you know, new things, you know, whether it's across, you know, construction or, you know, project management, things like that. Are you noticing that, you know, the innovation, you know, is it coming out of the US? Is it coming out of elsewhere? Is it sort of evenly distributed? How do you guys sort of see that, you know, pipeline of ideas?
We see quite a lot of innovation everywhere, truly. I think the US is still the leader on a lot of fronts, but Europe, for example, definitely stands out from a climate tech and sustainability standpoint, just because I think from a legislation standpoint, they're a little further ahead of us on that front as well. And then some of it really just depends on, you know, localized pain points as well. I think Asia is much more accustomed to really dense housing, for example. So doing more modular prefab there and kind of smaller units is something that's been around actually for decades, right? And isn't anything new to those folks. What's interesting to us right now is some of the cross-border opportunities. One of the deals that I'm looking at right now has to do with kind of not quite offshoring, but procurement in new markets. Just as a geopolitical situation has evolved, it's no longer as attractive to import a lot of materials from China on the construction side. And so we're looking at nearshoring from Mexico and Latin America, as well as just other offshoring opportunities in India or Vietnam and other alternative markets. So I do think a lot of the solutions out there are quite global as well.
Yeah. And in terms of the, you know, innovation that comes to you, do you guys, you know, obviously you have an office now in London, you said, and do you go and, you know, pursue some of these alternatives and, you know, companies in other places? How do you tend to, you know, look at those companies as an opportunity too?
Yeah, so our fund focus in terms of the North American PropTech Fund is kind of as stated, North American, right? But we do have some allocation for international investments, and we will look at those opportunistically. Ultimately, at the end of the day, though, we want to acknowledge that, you know, outside of Europe, where we do have more of a meaningful physical presence there now, we're not experts in, you know, Indian prop tech, right? We don't have anybody based in India. And so for us to invest in some of those markets, we would really need to be coming in alongside of folks with boots on the ground and more local expertise.
If you were to look at the landscape of all the companies that, you know, formed this, you know, space, how would you, you know, how would you, you know, break it up, right? You know, where do most of the ideas or most companies maybe come into? Is it, you know, construction? Is it in, you know, project management? Is it in sort of asset management? I'd love to sort of see maybe how you guys break up the industry, right? Kind of what or maybe how the industry breaks itself up, you know, in terms of where these ideas and companies are coming from.
Yeah, so I do think that construction tech is a bright spot right now across the board. There's a couple of reasons for that. I think construction as an industry has remained relatively resilient versus, you know, commercial real estate, obviously, I think has had a couple of black eyes in the last couple of years. So that helps. And then also just construction tech being probably a few years behind prop tech in terms of its adoption and some of the tools that are available too. So there's some more white space still available. So that's definitely a big area of focus right now for us. And then, you know, in the kind of existing asset side of things, we kind of look at it across asset classes to an extent, but we see that there's a lot of overlap, right? For the most part, the main differentiations tend to be between residential real estate on the single family side, then commercial as a very large bucket between kind of office, multifamily, hospitality, retail, things like that. And then some of the more like industrial, very large scale type projects, and then infrastructure, right? Like civil and things like that. So those are some of the categories that we're looking at, but we track companies across all of those and continue to see a lot of companies emerging in every single one of those categories.
Yeah. As a company, do you guys like residential more than commercial? Doesn't matter, or is it just more sort of the growth of the opportunity and how, you know, the market could scale?
We're very careful to pay attention to the macro trends. So obviously, interest rates right now are higher than they've been for a while, and so that has an impact on a lot of businesses and the transaction volumes in the market. So for us, it really comes down to more the business model and kind of the more kind of specific subsegments that some of these businesses might be targeting, and not necessarily kind of broad brush residential versus commercial. Because across the board in every category, despite some of the market challenges right now, we actually see, I would argue, more willingness and excitement to adopt technology now that times are lean and there's a real need to either generate more revenue, cut OPEX, whatever else, than there might have been in previous years. And so for companies that can generate real ROI and aren't, you know, super dependent basically on transaction volumes or interest rates being low, basically, there's success to be had kind of across every single category.
Right. If you were, you know, to look back and, you know, call out some, you know, successes, and I know this could be one of those, you know, you're not trying to sort of tell me if you have a favorite child or not, but I'm, you know, curious, you know, which companies would you highlight to sort of say, you know, these are some of the, you know, examples of things that you funded and that's done really well.
Yeah. So some of the things from our earlier funds that are probably worth calling out, Open Door is an investment from Fund One that we made. And we actually set up a partnership with Lennar, one of our home builder LPs at the time, in order for Lennar to basically sell homes directly to Opendoor. And that program has since blossomed quite a bit, and Opendoor is doing billions of dollars now of volume with home builders. So an example of a great success. And obviously they also went public and have done reasonably well, all things considered. So that's one example. Smart Rent is another one where we actually took the company public via our own SPAC. So a really deep partnership with that business, and a lot of LPs of ours actually use that company as well, and are active users and contributors to kind of the product roadmap as well.
In terms of success stories, you know, how difficult has it been for you guys to raise funds and find partners who are looking to kind of grow this business with you?
It really has gotten better and better over the years. So I think when we were first getting started, the whole idea of PropTech was still relatively novel. Sure, companies like Zillow and whatnot had been around, or CoStar, right? So there were certainly a couple of recognizable names, but PropTech as an industry was still very immature. And when I told people I was joining a PropTech fund, a lot of people had questions of, what's PropTech? Is that a large enough category to even invest the $200 million that we originally raised in, right? And of course, since then, the industry has really evolved quite a bit and grown quite a bit. So fortunately, the conversation now has evolved from what it was 5 years ago, which was oftentimes convincing someone that PropTech is real, that they need technology, that they should be actually implementing it, to much more of a, what's the latest and greatest technology, right? In the last 2 quarters, I've probably spoken to a dozen of our LPs, executive teams and boards about AI and what that means for their business, right? In light of all of the new excitement over OpenAI and other generative AI tools. So now there's much more of a, how do we stay ahead? How do we take advantage of technology? And it's basically considered kind of inevitable that organizations need technology, rather than, back even 5 years ago, there was a real question mark around, like, why can't I just do this on Excel?
Yes, exactly. And speaking of AI, I am curious, what are some of the trends that you are identifying that are kind of shaping the industry? And maybe a second part of that question is, how related is that to some of the macroeconomic trends that we're seeing, whether it's, things like interest rates or just, general economic slowdown in sort of the rest of the world, right? What are those things?
Yeah, so AI as a whole is a pretty wide category that we're excited about in a couple of different ways. So design, planning, architecture, visualization is a category that we're seeing a massive number of new startups emerge in, and people are tackling it in all sorts of ways. Some folks are focused on kind of the sales side of it and visualizing for consumers. Others are focused on, material selection. Others are focused on the actual kind of detailed BIM type models and like actual architectural plans and the MEP and things like that. So overall, we're really excited about that whole category. And we're already seeing some companies able to shorten, what was a very manual process by 50%, 70%, 80% plus. So that's really exciting. Some of the other use cases we're really excited about for AI are information management. So what I mean by that is being able to put all of your internal knowledge into AI, and the same way that you can ask ChatGPT today, obviously a lot of questions about the world and whatever topic you want, being able to actually ask your intranet basically questions about your proprietary data, like, when does this lease end? When was construction on this project supposed to start? How much is this invoice for? And being able to search in that unified way is something that we're really excited about. And that enterprise search use case is one that we already see some folks building in as well. And then from there, the natural evolution really eventually becomes kind of the co-pilot and agents, right? Actually allowing AI to not only retrieve information for you, but actually execute certain workflows for you, and being able to say, hey, draft me a lease for this unit, right, at this price. Or, the pricing is even automated as well, because AI can also do that. So over time, I think that AI is going to really have true order of magnitude impact on the efficiency of the industry. Separate from AI, I think we're tracking the labor shortage in construction quite closely. That's probably the other theme that I'm the most excited about. We have a 500,000 worker shortage in construction. That's how many open roles didn't get filled last year.
Yeah, wow.
So we really need to find a better way to get people into the trades and make the trades more attractive, and also hopefully increase the utilization rates of those who are already in the trades too.
Right, right. A couple of years ago, as prop tech was sort of becoming more of a kind of a mainstream thing, and companies were investing in all kinds of sensors and trackers, and kind of all this data was being produced. There was some concern, obviously, around whether the buildings themselves are either secure enough or have enough kind of cabling or fiber or whatever you want, right, to sort of handle all of this information now that they're becoming more live, right? I don't know if we can describe them like that, but you know what I mean. I'm curious from kind of a hardware point of view also. I think a lot of things that you're describing is sort of software-ish, if I'm not sort of mistaken, but from a hardware point of view, are you also noticing a lot of opportunity just in terms of wiring and creating kind of a systems inside buildings that just didn't exist 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just on every front, right? On-site connectivity continues to get better across the board and has been a trend for a number of years now, but is still one that we're continuing to see progress on the infrastructure side. And then beyond that, there are just so many more cameras and sensors and other IoT devices in pretty much every asset class now than there was previously. And we're seeing a lot of great implementation of IoT across the board, both more consumer facing as well as more operational as well. We're investors in a number of companies on the climate side that are working kind of at the building management system layer to help improve the efficiency of HVAC, for example, or water sure. usage and all of those things, tracking the usage, optimizing, when your HVAC is running versus not. So definitely seeing a lot of the IoT and sensors getting in there. And besides that, on the hardware side, the other thing we are tracking very closely is actually data centers. It's a asset class that obviously has grown increasingly attractive over the years and is doing really well right now. And we see AI as being a huge tailwind, obviously, behind the data center industry as well. And we are looking for, technology that makes data centers run more efficiently and effectively.
Yeah. Could that be a bottleneck for the industry until it sort of catches up? Given the AI is kind of, permeating into every aspect of our lives, I imagine it'll also be there for, businesses as well. But I am curious what your perspective is and if that, could pose a bottleneck, at some point.
I wouldn't be surprised if it did, to be honest. So just based off of, where we are today, hardware already is the bottleneck today for AI, right? But it's on the GPU side, not the data center side. But maybe the GPUs eventually catch up. And I don't know if the data centers will catch up because most data center projects take years and years to complete, right? It's, 5-10 year projects sometimes. And so just because, in 2022, a bunch of folks might have decided they were going to start building data centers doesn't mean that today, now we have the data center capacity that we might want.
Right. Switching gears a little bit, Sarah, I'm curious, as you guys have, been doing this for a while, what are typical, if there is a typical path for a company to sort of exit, right? From our experience, what we've seen is there's been a lot of kind of exits into services companies, whether it's, big global firms like, CBRE or JLL, and they're kind of create a new service offering by acquiring somebody like an investment firm that maybe you guys, helped get off the ground. But I am curious, is that still the sort of most, predominant way for these companies to kind of get to the next level versus sort of standalone kind of, firms that, like a Google or something like that, obviously, right? And I'm also curious, other firms that maybe weren't doing this, folks like, Autodesk, for instance, are you going to see new entrants into this market that are trying to kind of, grow their, offerings that they didn't have before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the services companies have been active and will probably remain active, but by no means are they really kind of the only or main channel even. I would say that we've always seen actually the more legacy software players as the primary acquirers in the industry. So whether that's the PMS folks like Yardi, RealPage, et cetera, or the construction folks like Autodesk and Trimble and even Procore now, that actually tends to be where we see more of the startups land over time, just given, of course, ultimately only a very slim minority of them will kind of stay standalone and make it to, an IPO stage or even just a private company that stays standalone. That being said, I wouldn't rule out, a Google or an Amazon in some cases, right? Especially for some of the more consumer-facing technology. Obviously, in the past, Google did acquire Nest and Amazon did acquire Ring, right? And
Sure.
those would be prop tech businesses. So I don't necessarily think that there's a no chance at all of some of those bigger technology players wanting a piece of the pie either, especially given how interesting the data is from some of the hardware components that are in consumer homes.
On the commercial sort of leasing side, are you noticing companies trying to figure out how to utilize technology to, lease space better, lease it more efficiently? I'm asking this because obviously in the commercial, real estate world, that's kind of the big the big issue these days, right? And I am curious, are there some innovations in that area that are emerging?
So we've been longtime investors in BTS, and that's always, I think, been the leader in terms of the commercial leasing innovation space. Unfortunately, I think right now we have more of a systemic issue and not necessarily an operational issue, right? In terms of just demand not being where it used to be and supply still
Sure.
being exactly where it used to be. So I think that's more the issue, and I don't think that the answer there is necessarily leasing more effectively, though that can help, but rather probably, looking at reusing the space for other purposes, like maybe urban data centers, or we've all heard a lot of talk about converting office to multifamily as well, especially in large cities with cost of living concerns and low housing affordability. So I think that a lot of that office could ultimately get repurposed over time.
Yeah, interesting. I would love to, as we close our conversation, hear a little bit about, some lessons learned, from your experience in this space, and maybe even a little bit about, things you would have, told your younger self a few years ago before entering this, industry. What would those be?
Yeah, lots of lessons learned for sure. I think that the three I'll kind of bundle all of them into the three takeaways I'll kind of bundle these into are kind of one, make sure you're investing in must-haves and not nice-to-haves, right? I think in the bull market times and the really high times of the market, we were really seeing quite a lot of amenities-focused startups, for example, and a lot of those have struggled, not all of them, but a lot of them. Just because, we all want a massage on demand, but what's the real willingness to pay and ability to pay for that versus something that reduces fraud in your leasing process, right? So the latter, I think, is much more of a need to have. And so that's number one. The second is looking for the right cost of capital to match the business model. In the early days of PropTech, we had a lot of companies, including Opendoor, which ended up being successful because of the time that they built that business in. But frankly, I think would not be building the business in the same way today, using very expensive venture dollars for quite a long period of time for balance sheet heavy businesses, right? Buying homes or making loans, other types of,
Sure.
very cash intensive operations that also, frankly, didn't have the risk, right, of a true kind of venture dollar. If you have a home, you have collateral right on the balance sheet. So you could suffer a loss still, but you're probably not going to zero on the dollars that you spent on the home. So that's where for us now we're looking much more to make sure that there is, you know, in some cases an OpCo PropCo model, OpCo FundCo model, and that people are appropriately leveraging debt facilities and warehouse lines and things like that, depending on the business model that they're choosing. And then I think the last thing is just, you know, prioritize efficiency no matter what. I think, again, just going back to the high times of the ZIRP environment, right? It was growth at any cost. And even though there were not as many repercussions at the time, once you had to slow down, it's very painful to change that mindset and cut all the fat that accumulated in a lot of the businesses, frankly. So making sure to stay efficient regardless of the external environment, I think is a good takeaway across the board.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. This was really informative, and we appreciate learning more about Fifth Wall and what you guys do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, God.
That was another episode of the Real Perspectives podcast, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to it. Conversations like these help us comprehend our evolving industry better and hopefully provide a perspective that helps you understand the dynamics of commercial real estate. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our show and tell your colleagues about it. That is the best way to spread the news and help us remain relevant across the industry. Cheers.